You are listening to 88.5 GPB Atlanta. Good Tuesday. I'm Ricky Bevington with a very special hour ahead of us. Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms is live in the studio answering my questions, but more importantly, she's answering your questions. You can submit yours to the mayor directly live using the hashtag on Twitter, #QuestionsForKeisha. There's also some comments coming in on her Instagram page. People are finding us in all locations. You can email your question to allatl@gpb.org. And we are broadcasting live, and you can join the conversation on the GPB News Facebook page. Mayor Bottoms, it's a pleasure having you here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
This is a very new type of radio show, I think, for GPB, for me, possibly for you. I just want to know, questions for Keisha, taking questions directly from constituents and members of our listening audience. Why are you interested in doing something like this?
Well, I describe City Hall sometimes as a bubble, and it really is in so many ways. We sit around and we do very important work, and quite often that work doesn't translate to the public. So for as well as intentioned as we may be, unless we're hearing directly from the public about the things that people actually care about, then it really is all for naught. So this is important for me as mayor to hear directly from people, what do you actually care about? Not just what we think you care about, but let's hear from you directly. And it helps us shape policy and just helps us lead the city in a better way.
You know, we announced this 16 hours ago, and the response has been overwhelming. We are getting questions from all over the city about a range of issues, from potholes to what are your favorite flowers, to who's your favorite Atlanta United player, to transparency and transparency and ethics at City Hall. It's amazing what's on people's minds, and I'm really excited as a journalist not to just have my questions for the mayor, and I have a long list, but to actually facilitate audience questions for the mayor. So this is new for me as well. So it's a pleasure to be doing this together. That said, we are going to get some important questions in today, particularly about affordable housing, ethics, and some other top issues. So the news from yesterday, we just heard GPB's Ross Terrell in the newscast explain it. Atlanta City Council voting yesterday to create a task force to study closing the Atlanta City Detention Center. It costs the city about $32 million a year to run. And after the vote, you tweeted your support for closing it. Why is this a priority?
This is a priority for our administration because we've talked so very long about criminal justice reform. So it's important that as we are doing the work behind closed doors, that we make sure that this is a very open and public process to have buy-in. Because when you're talking about the Atlanta City Detention Center, you are talking about a facility that over many, many decades has housed thousands of people. And so there are a lot of thoughts about how that facility is currently run, but also the potential to service our community. So this, the step that we took with Atlanta City Council on yesterday was to take a formal step to make sure that we are now creating a commission essentially comprised of former inmates, of community leaders, internal staff to help us chart the next course in this. So part of it's a feasibility study. How much will it cost to repurpose the jail? The other part of it is also what type of programmatic future will the jail have? Will it be GED training? Will it be vocational training? Will it be some form of housing? So this is the public process part of it, and we are excited to be moving into this next phase.
And if you have questions for Mayor Bottoms, we are live on the GPB News Facebook right now. You can join the conversation on Facebook at GPB News. Ethics has been a big topic among our listeners submitting questions. Restoring people's trust in city government has been a focus of your administration. Let's talk about open checkbook. This past September, the city launched checkbook.atlanta.gov. It states, Open Checkbook provides taxpayers the access and ability to see and track how their money is being spent. And if you haven't checked out this website, you can just go in and you can put in any search word you want, and any expenditure I actually did pizza the other day because we all like pizza. We know we've spent money on it. And every expenditure that the city of Atlanta has made on pizza popped up, right? So that just to give our audience a background on what that is. So on Twitter, someone using the handle CarWashGorilla asks the mayor, why has the city's open checkbook portal not been updated? The FAQ says it will be updated quarterly. Currently, it only has expenditures through July 2018.
So this is a new platform for us. As you mentioned, it was launched last year. Also last year, we had a cyber attack. And part of our recovery from that cyber attack is to transition the city to the cloud so that we won't have some of the same challenges we had in terms of looking for servers and trying to identify where information may be. So now that we have completed our transition to the cloud, we can now begin the quarterly updates as scheduled with Open Checkbook. We are also adding additional information onto Open Checkbook. You'll also soon be able to access credit card information as well. So there's been a lot of conversation surrounding P cards. You'll be able to see those expenditures as well. But the delay had to do with our transitioning to the cloud, which will help protect us from loss of information. God forbid if we ever have another cyber attack. But I want to remind people this is a new platform, so it takes a minute to get the kinks worked out. But we certainly are much more transparent than we were even 2 years ago.
Well, transparency, of course, has been priority. You entered office just over about a year and a half ago now amid a federal probe. So of all the things that you've been doing with transparency and restoring the public trust, do you think Atlantans do see you as independent from the prior administration's ethics problems?
I think people have always seen me as independent. I think there have been what I call dedicated detractors who have wanted to, I guess, assign my intelligence or my work ethic to someone else. But the reality is that I've always been independent and our administration has always been independent. And I really hope that over the last year and a half, people have seen that just in terms of the leadership team that we've created, the steps that we've taken to give people more open access to information related to how we are operating the city. And I think our work really should speak for itself. And I think to the extent that people don't think that I am independent or our administration is independent, I don't think that they ever will.
We are taking questions, your questions, for Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms on Twitter, hashtag questions for Keisha, and you can email your question allatl@gpb.org. Speaking of that cyber attack, it was March 2018. You had been inaugurated, what, 2 months prior. What a way to start your time in office. And for background, cyber attackers infected municipal computers. 5 key city departments were infected with ransomware, I believe. They wanted about $50,000 in ransom. And actually, a professor at Kennesaw State University has a question about Atlanta's cyber attack. Andrew Green is a lecturer of information security and assurance at KSU. And Andrew asks, are all city systems at full functionality after the ransomware attack? And what is your overall confidence level in the city IT and cybersecurity leadership?
My confidence level is extremely high. And again, that goes back to our ability to transition to the cloud. The only department that is still not at 100%, my understanding, is still municipal court. There was still some upgrades that we needed to do in that area. But what it's given us an opportunity to do is to actually create the system that we really should have had to begin with. Our system should not have been that vulnerable. When we were attempting to recover from the cyber attack, it was very interesting to even try and identify where the servers were. And it was personnel going, oh, I think there is one over here and there may be one there. And it really highlighted what a hodgepodge way that we were running such an important system. So we've transitioned to the cloud. We are, I would probably say, 98 to 99% there in terms of being fully functional. But more than that, we've also been able to take a leap and improve our systems in a way that we otherwise may not have had without the cyber attack.
Sometimes getting hit is actually makes you that much stronger, right? Has Baltimore called you? It happened to them 2 weeks ago.
Well, I wish they would. As many people may or may not know, we did not pay the ransom. And my belief was that even had we paid the ransom, we could not be guaranteed that we would get our systems back. And as I've mentioned, the systems were in such poor shape anyway. My thought was that we would take the hit and hurt for a bit to get to where we need it to be. And thankfully, it's worked out on the other end.
We are live with Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms. We have a lot more ground to cover. Questions coming in about preserving green space in the city, affordable housing, scooters. We're going to take a quick break. If you have a question for Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms, you can use the hashtag on Twitter, questions for Keisha. You can also email your question to allatl@gpb.org. We'll be right back.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. Kentucky is home to Mitch McConnell, who's been in the Senate since 1985 and has been the majority leader for 4 years. We'll talk to voters in his home state about their senior senator as we broadcast from Louisville. That's next time on Here and Now.
It's noon till 2 today on 88.5 GPB Atlanta and gpbnews.org.
Support for GPB comes from our monthly sustainers and Callaway Resort and Gardens, Georgia's authentic outdoor escape, offering two championship golf courses, the scenic Lakeview Course and the pro-level Mountain View Course, 12-time host of a PGA Tour event. More at callawaygardens.com. School is out for the summer, but that doesn't mean learning has to stop. That's why GPB is partnering with other Georgia organizations to offer free summer learning resources. Access healthy meals, books, activities, and more at georgiasummer.org.
You're listening to 88.5 GPB Atlanta. This is Atlanta's NPR News Station. I'm Ricky Bevington. A very special hour of programming right now. We're live with Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms, who is taking your questions using hashtag on Twitter, questions for Keisha, and you can email allatl@gpb.org. Affordable housing has been a major question among our audience members. It isn't all, you know, super heavy stuff, but people really do want to know things about homelessness, living wage, whether housing will stay affordable for Atlantans currently living here and people who want to move here. So let's just for some background, according to the latest census data, about 22% of people live in poverty. According to census, 9% of households make less than $10,000 a year. So be positive 0611. Asks, can the city of Atlanta enact a living wage for those who work inside city limits?
I think that that would be a challenge for us to regulate private employers. But what we have done as a city is enacted a living wage. So we've phased it over several years. We initially took up city employees to $13 an hour, then to 14 an hour, and this fiscal year we'll be going up to 15 an hour. And very proud to have sponsored that legislation as a member of City Council. But our hope has been, as we take the lead as a city, that our private employers will also follow that lead. But I think without some type of state regulation, it wouldn't be possible for us to do that.
Have you discussed this with state leaders?
I have not had this conversation with state leaders. The state obviously is very well aware of what we have done as a city, but this has not been something that I've discussed with state leaders. But I am making a note, and I will make sure that I put that on my list of things to discuss.
Well, you know, a living wage is part of the larger question of affordability for all types of housing around Atlanta. We have the Beltline building units. You campaigned on $1 billion affordable housing fund, and I'm sure that you'll update us on that right now. I think the latest figure is it's about 20% complete. Before I get to a listener question who wants to know a very specific development, a criticism of terms like affordable housing is that it's not really affordable for Atlanta's especially most vulnerable families. Like, affordable sounds great, but then when you get to the brass tacks and the dollars, it may not feel that way. So when you say affordable, what does that mean?
Well, In the city of Atlanta, we've appointed our first chief housing officer, a woman by the name of Terry Lee, who is doing incredible work on our behalf. And the important part of her appointment was that we had a lot of very well-intentioned players. We had the city of Atlanta, Invest Atlanta, Beltline, Atlanta Housing, many of our private developers, but we weren't all coordinated in the conversation on what affordability means in Atlanta and how do we achieve these goals. So for the first time, we're actually sitting around the table having this discussion. For the first time, we're also tracking dollars. Some of this will be old money, meaning money that we've gotten each year. Some of it will be new money. But the thing that we've realized that for Atlanta to truly be affordable and for us to be able to control affordability, we've got to begin acquiring property in the city. We have to be able to control permanent affordable housing in the city. And what I want people to understand, it's not the model that we got away from 20 years ago, meaning we're not going back to a housing project model, but it means that we have an assortment, array of choices for people in this city where they can live with dignity and they can also be able to afford a place in the city. So the only way that we can do that is if we own the property. So it may mean that we have to start acquiring property. It also means that we'll have to start redeveloping property, places that we own property, own land. The old Bowen Home site, the old Bankhead Court site. And we have to make sure that it's an assortment of housing. So when we talk about affordability in 2019, it's not just about someone who's living below the poverty line. It may be a school teacher, or it may be someone who works in the cafeteria. It may be a police officer, people who are making reasonable salaries. But to the extent that their housing options aren't available in our city, then it's not affordable to them.
I think a lot of people feel like Atlanta has a chance to get this right. There's so many other cities that we see haven't, you know, it's gotten away from them and they're now trying to retroactively dig out, right? My brother lives in San Francisco. I mean, we've read the headlines. And I want to stay on affordable housing, but I first want to get to a quick question because you mentioned Bowen Homes and Bankhead Courts. Brown Sugar 74 asks, what are the plans for the land of old Bowen Homes and Bankhead Courts? They're all torn down, now just growing grass. Surely something was in place. Living in the Collier Heights area, we would love to see something done nice in the area.
So this is the difference with Atlanta and places like San Francisco. We actually have land inside of our city limits that we can redevelop for housing. Part of our plan is what we simply say, we've got to start moving dirt. Meaning as we have this land and we're sitting on this land, we actually have to start redeveloping this land. Bowen Homes and the old Bankhead Court site are prime real estate property within the city of Atlanta, within the control of Atlanta Housing. And when you talk about cities and affordable housing, nobody has gotten it right. I had the privilege of sitting in on a presentation at the Blank Foundation, and the person doing the presentation put up a map on the screen, and it was a map of which city has appropriately addressed affordable housing, and the entire map was blank. So I do think it's an opportunity for Atlanta to get it right, and I do think we have an opportunity in a way that other cities don't have, because most entities don't have raw land in the way that we do in the city of Atlanta.
So you talk about having it be, it's not one silver bullet, it's a bunch of different small efforts and small pieces of policy toward creating dignity for all Atlantans.
And also education is a big part, because as what was the name, Brown Sugar?
Brown Sugar 74.
Brown Sugar 74 said, when you mentioned Collier Heights, you're mentioning a legacy neighborhood, beautiful neighborhood with a lot of people, a lot of seniors living in the area. And many people don't recognize where they are in the city, meaning the value of their land. So you may have a senior who may pass on and their children may have already bought their home, say in DeKalb County, for example, not recognizing that the Kaya Heights neighborhood is the hottest new neighborhood coming online in the city, and that there's really an opportunity for them to hold on to this property and to make sure that their family can continue to afford to live in the city. So I think as much of it has to do with us educating our communities, our legacy residents, as it does with anything else.
But if you can't afford your property taxes, you know, it doesn't matter how expensive your land is. If you're sitting on it and you can't stay.
As a member of City Council, I sponsored legislation called Displacement Free Zone legislation that we've implemented in the Vine City English Avenue area that essentially pays the rising property taxes for 20 years. It's my hope with the incentive package from the Gulch redevelopment, there was a $28 million affordable housing trust fund that we asked for in that package, that will be the seed money for us to expand these displacement-free zones throughout the city of Atlanta. And hopefully we can address these issues in neighborhoods such as Kaya Heights and other areas of the city that people are experiencing rising property taxes.
Is that tax money covering that, or is that private money?
No, this is private money. This is a part of the deal that we were able to structure with CIM on the redevelopment of the Gulch. We did something that had never been done in the city before. We created a benefits package within the deal, and part of that was a $28 million affordable housing trust fund, $12 million economic development fund, $2 million towards vocational training, and there were some other incentives in there. We did not specify how that $28 million affordable housing trust fund would be used, but it's my hope that we will find a way to create some other displacement-free zones throughout the city to help offset some of these rising property taxes.
Gentrification is a word that's used all the time in conjunction with the affordable housing conversation and enabling people to stay in their homes when their neighborhood is changing. Do you have any specific policies vis-a-vis gentrification?
I think that people need to understand what gentrification is. I think that people very ignorantly think that gentrification is related to race and don't recognize sometimes that African Americans are gentrifiers, especially in the city of Atlanta, because gentrification is an economic conversation. And I think that one, we have to be informed on what gentrification means. Secondly, not take the position that redevelopment is always bad, but take the position that when and if redevelopment comes, how do we preserve our neighborhoods? How do we preserve our legacy residents? How do we make sure that the people who have stuck with these communities have an opportunity to remain in these communities? Especially with our senior communities, creating opportunities for our seniors to age in place, meaning that when they age out of their homes, that they don't have to move 30 miles from where they own their home, that there are places for them to live, again, with dignity. Because it's not just about having affordable housing, it's about having opportunities for people to live with dignity. And I think that's the beauty of Atlanta, these diverse neighborhoods, whether it's racial diversity, whether it's socioeconomic diversity. But I think the biggest part is educating our communities on what gentrification means and how we can have redevelopment, but it not be at the expense of our legacy residents.
We could talk about this for another several hours, Mayor, and the questions are coming in. So let's take a break to reset. If you have a question for Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms, you can submit it on Twitter using the hashtag #QuestionsForKeisha. You can also email us at allatl@gpb.org. I'm Ricky Bevington here in the studio with the mayor. You're tuned to 88.5 GPB Atlanta, and we are streaming live on Facebook on the GPB News Facebook page.
Are you thinking of getting rid of your old car, truck, or RV?
GPB's vehicle donation program is here to help. Donating has never been easier. We'll take care of everything, including free pickup of your vehicle. Just go to gpb.org/cars or call 877-GPB-1-CAR. That's 877-472-1227, and thanks so much.
Beep, 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 yeah! Presidential hopeful Pete Buttigieg went to Harvard and Oxford, but he says the most important item on his resume is where he grew up, South Bend, Indiana.
I didn't even know that it was unusual to have empty factories and empty houses all around you. Then I moved out and realized that that was kind of a defining feature of my part of the country.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. Democrat Pete Buttigieg makes his case this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
4 till 7 today on 88.5 GPB Atlanta.
You're tuned to 88.5 GPB Atlanta. This is Atlanta's NPR News station. You can download the GPB Atlanta app, ask your smart speaker to play GPB Atlanta, or stream live at gpbnews.org. I'm Ricky Bevington. Thank you for tuning in for this special hour-long conversation live with Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms. This is our opportunity to have you interview the mayor along with me. We're taking your questions on the hashtag #QuestionsForKeisha and via email at allatl@gpb.org. I want to thank everybody who has submitted questions. They are coming fast and low, all from all over the place. And the topics are incredible, from the food forest that Atlanta City Council approved yesterday. I don't know anything about this, so we'll have to bring it up another time. We've got questions about the Gulch. We have questions about celebratory gunfire legislation. And we have questions about volunteer work. What are your favorite volunteer organizations in Atlanta? We can't get to absolutely everything, but they're great questions. And I love the brain trust that is the public radio audience here in Atlanta. I do want to talk about something that is very recently in the news, and everybody will know what I'm talking about when I say the Atlanta child murders. Between 1979 and 1981, nearly 30 black teenagers, children, and adults were killed in what would become known as the Atlanta child murders. So Wayne Williams was convicted of two of these murders. Recently, you have made this a priority for you. Of all the things that you can step forward on, you have asked authorities to re-examine evidence using the newest technology. Why do you feel the need to champion the Atlanta child murder cases?
Ricky, I've asked myself that question quite a bit. And as a woman of faith, the best answer that I have is that it is something that really is beyond my understanding. I don't know why it's so heavy on my heart or why it has been. But when I heard Mrs. Catherine Leach speak about her son Curtis and praying that someone would look at this and she could get some answers and would simply create some type of plaque to honor her son, it really resonated with me that this must be about her faith journey. And what I know is that sometimes when we pray about things, we don't know who will be the one to answer our prayers or in what form, but it has resonated with me in a way that has many times been very surprising to me. It is something that I lived through as a child in Atlanta, and watching Mrs. Leach and really experiencing these stories again as an adult is something that I just haven't been able to put to rest. So it initially began with a conversation with Will Packer, who was doing a documentary, and he gave me a call to let me know that this documentary was coming on. And around the same time, there were some news reports on Mrs. Leach wanting a plaque. So I said, the least that we can do is do something to honor these children. But the other part of that was around the same time, there was a story, a national story, about someone who had been arrested for killing two teenagers in Alabama, and they were able to track this killer based on some DNA, uploading it into a national database. And this killer hadn't been on anyone's radar. So I reached out to our police chief and asked if we had done anything recently through any other national databases. We had not. As fate would have it, she was having a meeting at the GBI the next day, and the GBI was on board and re-examining the evidence that we have. And what I want to remind people is we don't know if there will be anything for us to test or not. We're still looking at that and also looking at other cases from 1970 to 1985. What has struck me is that there were 158 murders of children up to the age of 18 during that time. Roughly 33 of them are still unsolved. So it's made us look at it with fresh eyes. One, to determine, does this list of nearly 30 children and young adults, does this include everyone who should have been included on the list? But I think the other part is, more than anything, it's my hope and my belief that many of the families have some peace and comfort in knowing that we haven't forgotten their children, and that their children mattered then and they matter now. And there's an opportunity for us to, at the very least, do something in a permanent way to honor these children. But also, it's our hope and prayer that we'll have some additional answers.
There's a lot of much bigger themes beyond, obviously, the tragedy of the murder of innocent children. This race is involved in this story, socioeconomic background, the geography within the city where this was taking place. Why does bringing closure to something like the Atlanta child murders, why does a city need to do that? This is a philosophical question, but all cities have skeletons, right? All communities have skeletons. Why does it feel like this one needs to feel, so many Atlantans feel that this needs to be closed?
I think there were so many people who were doubtful that Wayne Williams was actually the one who committed all of the murders. And if you look at the pattern, and I'm not passing any judgment one way or the other, but if you look at the list of almost 30 kids, two were young adults. Those were the two that he was actually convicted of. Two were girls. And based on what we traditionally know about serial killers, there are usually patterns. I believe one of the victims was actually shot, one or two. The others were strangled. And so there were just some things that don't fit in the patterns in the way that we normally think about serial killers. But I think most importantly, for me, it's about reminding people that these children lived and they mattered and they had families who loved them and they had futures ahead of them that were taken from them. And there's one little boy whose body has never been found. And even in talking with my team, what I realized, there's so many people who weren't born 40 years ago who had never heard of this. This is before social media. This is before the internet. And I think about my life in this city and having this blessing of being the mayor. And you think about these children who were doing nothing more than being children. There was one of the first victims was leaving the Greenbrier skating rink when he disappeared. It's the skating rink I went to every Saturday as a kid. And so going back to your question, why is it important? It's important because they mattered.
Solving the murder of children should be enough of a reason.
Yep.
You are listening to 88.5 GPB Atlanta. I'm Ricky Bevington here in the studio with Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms, talking about a whole range of issues and questions that are on your mind. People have been submitting questions. You can submit yours at hashtag questions for Keisha, and you can email your question to allatl@gpb.org. One of Atlantans' favorite discussion topics is potholes and road conditions.
Potholes unite us.
I know. We can all agree on one thing, and that is road conditions. So I'm going to combine a few audience questions into one go, and you can, this is potholes, this is metal plates, this is paving, this is traffic lights. Again, we could spend an hour on the condition of Atlanta's roads. So Bluest Love asks, The potholes in the city are rampant. Given the amount of money this city is generating, what is being done to repair them and the timeline? And I'm going to go ahead and add on Baker Owens tweeting as TJP man. What is the deal with the metal plates? Is there a time period for letting work, like on pipes underneath the roads, underneath set? Is there too big of a backlog of other potholes, or all three, or something else? So we've got questions about potholes and metal plates specifically.
Let me begin by saying I feel very inadequate with my very boring social media handle. Blue is love.
Right.
I'm feeling like I need to upgrade and be a lot more creative. But potholes, I joke, but it really is true. Potholes unite us. What struck me is that I don't care where I am. I don't care if I'm on the grocery store aisle. I don't care if I'm in Walmart. Even when I was talking with Bernie Marcus, a billionaire, clearly, he mentioned potholes. Everybody cares about potholes.
The co-founder of Home Depot, and he wants to ask the mayor about potholes.
About potholes. The same way the person behind the deli counter in Publix wants to ask. And what we did, we launched what we call ATL Fix It. It's our Fix It campaign. We've fixed already 20,000, nearly 20,000 potholes in the city of Atlanta. So the fact that people are still talking and frustrated about potholes tells you how bad this problem is. In all of 2017, I believe we had repaired less than 3,000. We also created an app. So if you see a pothole, if you see a metal plate, maybe difficult while you're driving, but if you can take a picture and upload it to our 311 app. If you can't take a picture, if you can just give us the coordinates, our time frame for repairing potholes is less than 72 hours. The other challenge we have, there are a lot of metal plates around the city. Quite often those plates are not assigned to the city of Atlanta. Sometimes they are, but sometimes they are not. They may be a cable company doing work. They may be a power company doing work. We've tried to create a system by which we can track those plates. But again, if it's a plate that's you've been passing over for the last month and it doesn't look like any work is being done, if you can't get a picture of it, just upload the two closest addresses that you can see, and we can have someone come out and assess it and try and track it down and have it removed if it's appropriate to be removed.
You know, there was a great meme, this is terrible, but after the I-85 bridge fire, right, when I-85 was burned, mm-hmm. The joke, one of many joke memes was that Atlanta just put a metal plate over it, right? Anybody who's driven here for a week can understand. One of the questions that came in, Mayor, suggested that the roads in Buckhead are paved nicely, whereas other neighborhoods are not. What is your response? And I'm sure you've heard that before, to that.
Bernie Marcus would disagree. And my response to that is we have really been focused on equity in the city of Atlanta. By that, I mean, even with our ATL Fix It app, we have a way that you can look in their pin drops for every place that we've either made a repair or received a complaint. In looking at that map, what I did see is that on the south and west side of Atlanta, the reports were not as plentiful. Well, I live on the south side, so I know how bad the roads are. What I've challenged our team to do is don't rest on social media in terms of in technology, that in many of our neighborhoods, especially where we have seniors who may not have access to technology, we've got to physically go out and lay eyes on these streets. So what the plan is that if we have not received a report on a street, either a repair or a report, that our plan is to send a team out to physically assess that street just in case for some reason the community has not reported it. Because what I know is that a lot of times there are many of our neighborhoods where they've been in such disrepair for so long, people unfortunately don't have an expectation that it should be any different and it should be any better. And that's on us to make sure that we are assessing. And even when people aren't asking for things that they should ask for or even have the ability to ask in a way they may in Buckhead or other areas, that we're taking it one step further and still doing what we should be doing anyway as a city.
We have to take a final break right now. As much as I want to continue to talk about potholes with you, Mayor, we'll just take a 1 minute break. I'm live in the studio with Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms. I'm Ricky Bevington. We are streaming live on the GPB News Facebook page. You can join the conversation. Ask the mayor your question. This is 88.5.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Coming up on the next On Point, the quest to find and move water has always been essential to the California dream. From overdeveloped farmland to overbuilt suburbia, the water system's at a breaking point. California writer Mark Erics chronicles the ever-present battle over water and resources in the new book, The Dreamt Land. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
11 o'clock this morning here on 88.5 GPB Atlanta and GPBnews.org.
I'm Ross Terrell, GPB's reporter in Atlanta. I cover issues that affect the metro area, and I break down what they mean for people across the state and people just like you. Issues like MARTA expansion and new cityhood movements making their way through the Gold Dome. Listen to Georgia Public Broadcasting for in-depth reporting that matters and stand with the facts.
It's great to have you listening to Atlanta's NPR News Station, 88.5 GPB Atlanta. I'm Ricky Bevington, live in the studio with Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms, taking your questions using the hashtag #QuestionsForKeisha. The email address is allatl@gpb.org, and you can join the conversation live. The mayor and I are right there on the video stream on Facebook at GPB News. I would be remiss if I did not ask the mayor about scooters, something that we're all familiar with. So a listener in Grant Park asks, in January, the city passed an ordinance to keep electric scooters off the sidewalk and for the companies that own them to encourage riders to wear helmets. What is she doing to enforce these rules?
Well, I took a deep sigh. My son was out on a scooter this weekend, and don't tell him, but I was tracking him on my Life 360 app, and it was very frightening that he was out, and also very frightening that he was making some turns into some neighborhoods that he probably was completely oblivious as to where he was going. So I share that because there's this concern about scooters on our sidewalks, but also it's this great opportunity for connectivity, but also there are challenges that come with that because it creates an opportunity for people to get places that they otherwise wouldn't go with ease. But I think it's important for people to remember that scooters, this is new technology for us. If you think about just even a couple of years ago, with the creation of Uber and Lyft, we were having a conversation on how we regulate it and what it means to the city, and it created a very different model. And fast forward a couple of years ahead, and it's something that people use quite frequently. So with scooters, we really are trying to address the challenges that we have in real time. And we have regulations that relate to speed limits and with them being on sidewalks, and if they aren't cleaned up from the sidewalks, then potentially the owners can be fined and their license revoked, et cetera. But this really is a work in progress. And for all of the laws and regulations that we have, we know that there will always be kinks that need to be work through, but I think that we have to look at the positive aspect of scooters. It allows people who otherwise may not have transportation to be able to get around our city. But also, I think that we have to continue to monitor where we are with scooters and make sure that people are using them responsibly.
There's really a kind of a public nuisance perspective, but it's also public safety. And I should say that it's not all making light of scooters. Atlanta did just see its very first scooter death in the last couple of days. A 20-year-old was leaving the parking lot of the West End Lake MARTA station for what urban planners might call that last mile, right? He probably took the subway. I don't know, but people maybe take the subway and then they hop on the scooter for that last leg, right? And I know City Council, of course, has been passing legislation and work in progress. And public transit will be something that, again, we're not going to get to this hour. I would like to ask you, Mayor, some just lighter questions from our audience. We have an Instagram submission from Handle Environmental Engagement, who simply asks, what type of flowers do you like?
Tulips.
Tulips. Okay.
And yellow roses.
Okay. And on a slightly more serious note, Scarlett L. Hawk on Twitter asks, is there a workforce program for youth in Atlanta this summer?
Through the WorkSource Atlanta department, we do offer a work program for our kids. We are actually looking to really expand that program this summer and have a very big youth engagement component this summer. So that information, you can access that information through WorkSource Atlanta.
On Instagram, Sir NOC asks, this is not totally about Atlanta City policy, but we'd like your perspective. How can we encourage TV and radio to show more positive depictions of Black people?
Well, I think that the biggest thing that we can do, if there's TV and radio that's not showing positive depictions, then stop watching and stop listening. I think that's how we influence what's on our airwaves. I think that there's a market for a lot of bad behavior because we watch it. And I think that television and radio obviously are driven by advertising dollars. So if we stop watching, then I think that influences what images are placed before us.
As I said, when we open this up to all questions, people ask all sorts of questions. You can ask the question, the mayor, your question at hashtag questions for Keisha, or email us at allatl@gpb.org. We do have a question about programs for young children over the summer. Are there summer programs for small children?
We have Camp Best Friends, which goes back many decades. And we talked earlier about the missing and murdered children. Camp Best Friends was actually created in response to that, to give a safe place for our kids to be during the summer. So it will be at all of our public recreation centers. You can get more information on Camp Best Friends at atlantaga.gov. And also, we will be kicking off the mayor's summer reading program with our kids in a couple of weeks as well.
We have a question from inside the building now. GPB TV's A Seat at the Table is asking, the Essence Festival is celebrating its 25th year and has always been hosted in the city of New Orleans. Do you think the city of Atlanta would want to host the Essence Festival?
I'm going to be very careful about anything that I say about New Orleans, because I ticked a lot of people off when I said I didn't want the Saints to play in the Super Bowl. But I would say I love the Essence Festival. I would love for Atlanta to host the Essence Festival. Just don't tell anybody in New Orleans that.
Okay, so let's talk about green space. Marie Maurer asks on Facebook, what initiatives are being implemented to preserve green space and or forests in and around the city of Atlanta?
We have signed on to a pledge with mayors across the country that essentially has said that we are working to have green space within a 10-minute walk of every resident in the city of Atlanta. I live in an MPU with the dubious distinction of being the only MPU in the city that does not have green space. So I think part of it has to do with, one, making sure that we continue to acquire green space in all of our communities. But secondly, making sure that our parks are well maintained and have the access and have the amenities that people want to be a part of. So we know that we have the Westside Park, Bellwood Quarry site coming online, which is going to be even bigger than Piedmont Park. It is going to be incredible. It is, people may recognize it. The Walking Dead is often filmed there. And I think that as we expand parks like Piedmont Park, and we have the Westside Park coming online is equally important that we also make sure that our smaller pocket parks within our communities are also accessible as well.
Why don't you update us on the quarry before we wrap up in just a couple of minutes? I didn't realize it's going to be bigger than Piedmont Park.
It will be bigger than Piedmont Park, and it is beautiful. And it's also going to have it's a multi-purpose space because it will also have a 30-day water supply, emergency water supply. So it's going to be a beautiful feature in terms of just simply how it looks, but also we'll have this 30-day water supply and access to this park from many of our Westside communities, including the Grove Park community. And so you think about what Piedmont Park means to Midtown, this Westside Park will now mean the exact same thing to our Westside communities.
And it's in Northwest Atlanta.
It is in Northwest
Atlanta. The Beltline Spur.
Yes.
Okay.
And it's an old quarry where they used to get granite. So it's beautiful.
It's cool. I think people would recognize it. It's also been in Stranger Things, that quarry.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So people, they probably know what it looks like based on our pop culture TV habits.
And when you fly over it, you'll recognize it too.
We have just a couple of minutes, Mayor. And before we close, we would like to make a very special announcement. It has been a really fun hour asking hashtag questions for Keisha. This question's coming in from all over the city of Atlanta. But a grand announcement this morning. This is not the last time you and I are going to be doing this. We are very pleased to share with our listening audience, Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms will be joining me live in the studio every month to answer questions for Keisha. We don't have a date yet for next month, but before, what is next month? June. Before June is out, the mayor and I will be sitting right here again having these conversations, and we are so encouraged by the response so far by Atlantans. So in the meantime, keep your questions coming to hashtag questions for Keisha, and the email address is allatl@gpb.org. Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms, any final remarks after this hour-long conversation?
This has been great. Thank you for having me, and thank you to everyone who sent in their questions. This is as informative as anything in terms of things that we need to pay closer attention to, because we now know what people actually care about. So to the extent that we thought we knew that people cared about potholes, it's been reconfirmed. So thank you.
And green space and storm drains.
Absolutely.
And much more. So thanks to our listening audience. You've been the biggest part of this show. I'd also like to thank producer Sophia Salaby, engineers Jesse, Deborah, Alex, Aaron. We've got Ellen Reinhardt, our program manager, our managing editor, Sarah Shariari, Allison Hashimoto, our chief content officer. And I'm sure that there are names who've been helping us on this program that I have left off. It is truly a group effort. You have been listening to an hour conversation live with Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms. I'm Ricky Bevington. Thank you so much for joining us here on Atlanta's NPR News Station, 88.5 GPB Atlanta.